The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And I guess it's Thursday because here I am again, Stan Claff from the Hebrew Order of David International, where we operate in the United States, United Kingdom, Israel, Canada, and South Africa. Tonight, we're taking the unprecedented step of bringing back a guest from last week because of the response that we had in discussions about the Shabbos Project and about his book. And welcome Rabbi Daniel Brody from Israel. And we're going to talk about, once again, advance some of the discussions that we had last week on Shabbos. Hello, Rabbi.
Shalom, Stan. Thank you very much for having me at the in this program.
And it's really a pleasure. And I have to tell you, a lot of questions were raised following our discussion last week. Some, of course, with my knowledge of your book, I was able to answer 99%, but I've left a few over for you. And in all seriousness, there's some issues that I really want to discuss, and two of them boil down to very simple questions. So one question which came about over the weekend, and it's something which has been on my mind for quite a long time, is the question of inviting secular or non-religious Jews to Shabbos, and what is the ruling? So would you like,
okay,
can I give you a bit of thought to start with, or would you like to just launch into it straight away?
Look, it's like this. Before I give the answer, one has to appreciate the question. So if you understand the sensitivity of the question, then you'll be able to consider and appreciate the answer. So let's just go into the question first, before we hit the answer. The question that you're asking is as follows. We've got two sides of this question. So on the one hand, if you invite someone that you know that's going to drive to you, so then you're causing them in a certain sense to break Shabbos. I'll go into that side of the equation, but just understand that that's the first side of the equation. On the other hand, if you don't invite them, then how are they ever going to experience a real Shabbos, and how are they ever going to therefore get closer to keeping Shabbos?
Before you start, yep. I think I should have laid down the assumption that the host is, of course, religious and observant. And I'm presuming that the guest, it's not one secular Jew inviting another. It's a religious Jewish family inviting an individual or family to a Shabbos meal at a religious home.
Correct. Right. Once the host is not yet committed to Shabbos yet, so then it's going to be very hard to justify him inviting someone else to come over because you don't have the second side of the equation. So let's deal with a family that's involved and committed to Shabbos, that's inviting over a family that isn't yet. So the first side of the equation is that we just have to appreciate is that Shabbos is very, very severe. Okay, it's very severe in that if we had the Beis Hamikdash with the Sanhedrin, you know, with the ultimate court of law, as it should be, and you had two witnesses, and they testified to a person breaking Shabbos, and he knows what he's doing, it even carries the death penalty. Now that's major, and it carries the highest form of death penalty. So one has to appreciate, I'm not yet to scare people, but I just need to explain what the Torah says, because that, if I don't explain it, I just don't know who will, because, you know, if I'm the one that's learning Torah and I'm supposed to give over Torah, then I have to explain what the Torah is saying. And the Torah does bring down a death penalty. We don't have this today because we don't have the mechanics to do it. We don't have a Sanhedrin. We don't have that court of law that can enforce it.
Also, but we can't really afford to lose too many Jews in this fashion.
No, no, no. Don't worry. When the Beis HaMikdash comes, then everybody will be much, much more inclined to get closer to Hashem. It will, a lot of things will be far more revealed, and there will be a lot less of the Yetzer Hara and the, you know, the evil inclination. And the what the Gemara says in Brochas, that the nations will have less of an impact and an influence upon us. So we would, anyway, at that stage, there would be a much more following towards keeping all the mitzvahs of the Torah. In fact, according to one opinion in the Gemara in Makkas, so a Beis Din that actually ever put someone to death was seen as like a murderous Beis Din. You know, so I'm just explaining to you that the likelihood of it ever happening, even then, right, is going to be is very small. But you have to appreciate that it does carry the death penalty. And actually, on the flip side, when you keep Shabbos, the Gemara says that if a person keeps Shabbos, Gemara in Shabbos says that if a person keeps Shabbos, so then he gets his averas put aside. Rad moichlin lois kolavanoisav, says the Gemara. These averas are almost forgiven. Now, that's a whole shiur in its own right. But you just have to appreciate how severe Shabbos is, both in if one breaks it and on the flip side, if one keeps it. Now, based on that, the Torah also tells us that you're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of the blind. It doesn't just mean that you're not allowed to put a rock in front of someone who can't see, but it also means you're not allowed to give bad advice. So if you know that someone is trying to buy a car, you can't say to them, go buy that car over there when you know that car is terrible, right? Because you're putting bad advice in front of them. Now, when a person invites someone to him and he knows he's going to drive on Shabbos, and we've just explained that driving on Shabbos is a severe avera, so then it's almost like he's putting a stumbling block in front of it. It's not exactly the same. I have to explain that it's not exactly the same because it's not like giving him non-kosher to eat. If you give someone something that's not kosher to eat, that's a classic case of putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Okay? But here, you're not driving them, or you're not forcing them to drive, or you're not, you know, they're making the decision. However, there is another level of putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, and that is called Masayaya, where you are helping them. So, Tosfos brings in the Gemara in Shabbos, and the Shach brings in Yoredeya, but these are the Meforshim, these are the commentators, and we rule like this. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein does call it Masayaya, you're helping someone do an Aveira in a certain sense. So one just has to appreciate how we would get to a ruling. So on that side of the equation, it's very hard to find an opening. Okay, now let's go to the other side of the equation, and let's say, well, one second, how's this person ever going to experience and just get the enjoyment of Shabbos? I'm pretty sure, this is my view, that if a person who hasn't yet committed to Torah and mitzvahs were to spend 4 Shabboses in, well, my house or someone's house that keeps a Shabbos in the way that we try and keep it, so I'm pretty sure that it would change their whole mabat, their whole view of Torah and mitzvahs, their whole view of Hashem would change. That is my view. And so therefore, if you don't have them come over, so then how are they ever going to experience that change? And especially in our generation, you know, things have changed since say 40 years ago. 40 years ago, you could ask a person, well, how interested are you in truth? And the person would tucker say, yeah, I actually am quite interested in truth. But today we're a different generation. We're a much more experiential generation. A person has to experience the beauty and the warmth and the delight of Shabbos in order to start to get drawn into it. Now, if you don't invite them over, then how's that ever going to work? So now we can appreciate both sides of the equation. And that would be the question. Now, can I move on to the answer now?
Okay, I just want to add in one little thing, which I discovered. I found that, I think around 2 years ago, the Ministry of Religious Affairs in Israel was deciding to embark on a program where they would actually pay religious families to host people, non-religious people, to Shabbos. I don't know whether that ever, it was a proposal, whether it ever came to fruition, I don't know. But it was quite widely reported at the time. And it's interesting that they would kind of encourage that sort of thing by paying for it. I could be way off mark, but that's according to some of my research that I've done.
That's very interesting. I think that would be a brilliant idea, because the main issue is that people just have never been exposed to the warmth of Yiddishkeit. You know, if you just enjoy, you know, just the songs, and you enjoy some of the Divrei Torah, the words of Torah, and you just the whole environment, it just awakens the soul, and you realize that you're part of something much bigger. To be a Jew is the greatest gift that a person could ever get. You know, Hashem's given you an opportunity of a lifetime, literally. He's given you so many mitzvahs, right? And you've got X amount of years to go and do those mitzvahs. You know, what could be greater? And if you do those mitzvahs, it's almost, that's the food that's going to carry on even once once a person passes on. So, you know, but one has to appreciate it. And the biggest issue here, especially in Israel, but it's a phenomenon around the world, is that people just don't know. There's a real ignorance. I once heard a statistic, this was probably 7-8 years ago, about soldiers in the army who were going to the Kotel for the first time. And it was something around 65% of soldiers had never been to the Kotel, right? And that's at age 20. So, I mean, there's just a huge gap over here in terms of knowledge. And, you know, it's not on purpose. There's no blame over here. It's just that there is just a lack of knowledge over here. So, therefore, if we go back to the Shaila, how are you ever going to show people the beauty of Yiddishkeit, you know, if you don't bring them in?
Right, so we're talking to Rabbi Daniel Brody on the matter of Shabbos. He's written a book called Learn Shabbos on 3 Minutes a Day. And we're discussing the idea of, is it right or wrong to bring non-religious Jews to your home if you're a religious family for Shabbos. And so we've talked about why you're asking the question, and now we're going to talk about what's the shaila, what's the answer.
So, look, I need to preface this to say that it's not a one-size-fits-all answer.
Sure.
One needs to contact a good, a competent, a sensitive halachic authority, a rabbi that's absolutely passionate about the Torah, but he's also passionate about bringing Jews back to the fold.
That's you.
So, but one has to. The Mishnah in Avos says, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that the more that you discuss something, so the more wise you become, right? So the more that you discuss it with someone, the more of an eitzah, the more of a of the right counsel you're going to get. So it's not a one-size-fits answer, but since, you know, you've asked the question, I have to give something. So the basic rule over here is that you can't do it. You can't invite someone over. Why? Because you're going to be a part of their, a cause of their avera. However, there are one or two exceptions to this. Number one is where you see that it can have an impact on them. If you know, you know, or if you can even guess or estimate that it could have some sort of an impact, so then there's more room to invite them over. And this is very hard to gauge. And that's why it's very hard to say in a public forum that it's permitted to do this, even this exception. But that would be the point of call over here. But if you know for sure that it's not going to have an impact, you know, if you've been inviting someone over for 10 years and there's absolutely no change, so it's very hard to justify keep on inviting them over. So that would be the first exception. If you can see that there's going to be change. Now, let me just also add one other thing. Then often what happens is that the parents of people are very stuck in their ways, and it's very hard to change what they've always grown up with. But their kids are often going to be, they're going to be enthralled. They're going to be quite, they're going to get some sort of a kick and enjoyment, and they're going to see something special over here. And so it could be that over time, what may happen is that you may not have such an impact on the parents, but the children, having experienced the Shabbos, so then slowly, slowly, they may actually grow closer. And it could be that the parents, by being, in touch with a religious or committed, family, will then also decide to send their children to, a school that's appropriate and so forth. So, again, you can see that it's not a straight line answer. There's a lot of variables over here. The other thing I would say also is that it also depends how you're going to word it. You know, if you invite someone else, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says this, right? He says, if you invite a person, he say, why don't you come and stay at me? Okay, because then you've given them the option then of staying at them, and then they won't have to break Shabbos. Now, if they then go and decide not to stay at you and to drive, so then at least you haven't been a part of that. Again, you can see the line that I'm taking is that your default rule is that you actually can't do it, but there are exceptions, and one has to have a keen eye exactly on how to do it. There's one last point I want to mention, and Rav Yoshev says this, and that is that you never know when you're going to have an impact on someone. So that first exception, that it may actually impact someone, may be a very, very, very likely possibility, even though, you haven't seen any change yet. So one has to be on top of it. One has to also be careful of a chilul Hashem. Well, the case is, let's say you've got a bris. A bris is supposed to be on the eighth day. Now, if everybody arrives, with five buses and taxis to the bris on Shabbos, so it doesn't look good. It's a bit of a, it just doesn't look good.
Not in the spirit.
It's a problem of Shabbos itself, but it's just not in the spirit. It's what we call a chilul Hashem. Here you've got something which is just not having enough regard for Hashem. So this is a very complex question. That's why one has to appreciate both sides of the question, and one has to go and deal with this question with a very, very sensitive and very knowledgeable, passionate halachic authority.
So the Hebrew Order of David is made up of men. We're a fraternity, international fraternity, and we don't keep out, or we don't discourage membership from people who are religious or non-religious. That isn't even in the equation. There's marriage situations where the rule is that if you're not married in the faith, to a Jewish woman, then you can't be a member. And if you are a member and of course you marry out of the faith, then you would no longer be welcome as a member. So, but from the point of view of, the other side of what the Hebrew Order of David is about is really that we are trying to attract people into a Jewish organization. And our experience around the world, it's not as prevalent in South Africa, but certainly it is very palpable in places like the United States, Canada, England to a certain extent. And that people are drifting away. And I think that this is somewhat of a problem if people in the organization who are religious are not inviting them into their homes. We're supposed to be a fraternity, are not becoming friendly with them in that way, because there's a very big social side in the Hebrew Order of David. And so obviously we want to try and encourage this type of intermingling to try and bring people more. I'm not saying that we are advocating that you become religious overnight, but we certainly advocating that you should do Jewish and be Jewish in that way. So, you know, there's two sides to what we're about in the sense that, although we're not religious, we need to bring out the Jewishness in order to attract membership and keep our members, you know, as far as assimilation is concerned, et cetera, et cetera. So the more that you can give them a taste of it, or the more that you can push that side of it, the better chance that we have.
Yeah, of course. I mean, again, as I say, it's a very sensitive question. And the main thing is that one has to just get a lot of aitza, counsel on this point. But, you know, you asked me the question, so I'm giving you the technical halachic answer. And then one has to just take in all the different variables, you know. And, you see, Shabbos is Shabbos. Shabbos is like the heart of the Jew. You know, they're different. There's 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, and there's 613, organs in the human body, 248 muscles and, limbs, at least 365 muscles. Each limb and each muscle corresponds to a different mitzvah in the Torah. Now, just like certain limbs and muscles of the body are more critical than others, so too in Torah, in the whole Torah, there's certain mitzvahs are more critical than others. And you see that just by way of what the consequence is. There's a different consequence if someone does one Aveira versus another Aveira and so forth. So Shabbos is very critical. So that's why it's almost like the heart of the Jew. And here we really are stuck on a tightrope, because on the one hand we have to protect Shabbos. In fact, there's a mitzvah to protect Shabbos. There's Shamor as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. You actually have to guard Shabbos. There's actually a mitzvah to make sure that Shabbos is not getting broken. And on the other hand, you have to bring people in, because as you say, how else are people going to do Jewish and be Jewish? You know, so it is a hard, it is a difficult one. The shaila is, can you break a mitzvah in the Torah in order that a person should do more mitzvahs? And so therefore the main thing that one has to look out for is it going to have a real impact? You know, and if it is going to have a real impact somewhere along the line, then maybe there's cause to justify it. You know, so, and all the, you know, the main organizations in the world that are involved in outreach have this question. And so it's, you know, it's not a new question, but it's something which is on a date, you know, on a weekly basis. We find this, with this issue. So one has to be on top of it.
So some of my best friends are religious Jews. So Nathan Glaugauer sends a message. He said, surely it's good for Jews to see the example. Also, Hachnasat Orchim. What do you say about that?
Yeah. So, you see, the thing is like this, is that he's 100% right. And that was the second side of the equation, is that they have to see an example. Hachnasat Orchim is a positive mitzvah of the Torah. It's a positive. Now, we don't usually break a negative mitzvah in order to fulfill a positive mitzvah. You know, you can't write a Sefer Torah on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to write on Shabbos. So you can't write a Sefer Torah on Shabbos in order that you're going to read the Torah on Shabbos.
Right.
You know, one of the few exceptions, and that's because the Torah says it, is the Bris Milah, you're allowed to, even though making a bruise or making a wound in a person is actually a Torah prohibition on Shabbos. But because the Torah says that on the eighth day you have to give a bris milah, so that's why you're allowed to do it. So we don't usually find that a positive mitzvah is going to push away a negative mitzvah, you know. And so therefore, even Achnasat Orchim is a huge mitzvah, you know, and it certainly is encouraged. But the question is it going to override this? So again, I can't emphasize the point enough. It's really a sensitive issue, and I'm all for inviting people over, you know. Just the question is, how do you go about it, you know? So therefore, maybe the language has to be come stay at me, or maybe, you know, I want you to experience the beauty of Shabbos. And then at least, you know, you've got a slight opening over here.
But if your intentions are good.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
So we're talking to Rabbi Daniel Brody. This is the HID Hour. I'm Stan Claff. If you want to send us a telegram, it's 061-895-1019. If you want to SMS us, it's 34519 if you'd like to participate in the discussion. As far as, I don't want to belabor the point too much. I think that in my personal opinion, I enjoy, although I'm not particularly religious in that regard, I enjoy being invited out. I enjoy seeing what takes place at people's homes on Shabbos. It's a pleasure for me to go. It's a pleasure to be in the company of my grandchildren, and my children, of course. But, to go to a religious home and see how they conduct the Shabbos is very interesting, and it's very enjoyable. It's, besides having my once a week whiskey, I enjoy the, you know, seeing what is and being and participating. And I'm sure that most people feel the same because it is, you know, doing the right thing, and it's also something which is an enjoyable and maybe it is a stepping stone to doing something more.
Yeah, so that's really the big issue, is it a stepping stone? And one never knows the real impact of it. You know, it could be that somewhere along the line it does something to a person, and one never knows when that's going to actually manifest. So that's why it's very hard, you know, in a public forum to give a one-size-fit-all sort of ruling over here. So, you know, the example that a person sees is really going to have the biggest impact on him. And so that's why it's important that you didn't spend, you know, time with each other. The only question is that, how do you do that, you know, in a halachically workable way? That's really the question.
Well, in my humble opinion, I think that the more that outreach that one can do, the better for the community at large. I think if you are able to open your home, I mean, there's some homes here in Johannesburg run by Rabbonim, who invite people as a matter of course to their meals. And I think obviously there's an essence of necessity in some cases, but at least they're bringing people to the home. They're giving them a taste of Shabbos. That's got to do good.
That's exactly so, and that's exactly the point. Is that those Rabbonim have obviously been very sensitive about this topic, and they've worked out that the impact that it could have on the people or their children is enough to justify it. You know, I'll tell you a nice anecdote. I know someone who was dating a girl. Okay, he wasn't yet keeping Shabbos, and she was. Her family wouldn't have been too excited that this guy's, driving in on Shabbos. So he used to park around the corner and then walk in. And this happened, a couple of weeks, a couple of months, for a certain amount of time. But eventually, because he had spent some time in her home, so he saw how beautiful Shabbos is and that this is a way of life and this is really the purpose of life. So what happened is that he actually himself started keeping Shabbos. So, you see that, whether it's direct or it happens over time, this being in another person's home over Shabbos can have and usually does have a real impact. So that's why, as I say, it's a sensitive question. And, alavai that everybody, should be at the stage where they're interested, and therefore it will make that impact. In which case, it becomes justifiable.
I heard a similar story, but didn't have quite the same ending. I heard that the father of the young lady decided that he would walk the young man to his car. But anyway, I want to move on to a slightly different topic. I asked you last week about the role of the man in the house, and a little bit of talking and discussing with various people. I hear that I wasn't really aware of it, that the man is expected to do at least one thing towards a Shabbos meal. Am I incorrect in that? Or is it something which is just problemized or something which actually has some substance?
No, I would say
like buying a piece of fish or not buying the whiskey, obviously, but, you know, adding to something to the evening or the day, whatever it is.
Right. We have a general principle. It's learnt after in the Gemara and Kiddushi. We have a general principle that, mitzvah bo yoser bibishluchoy. Right. There's a mitzvah. A mitzvah is better done by yourself than if you get someone else to do it. Okay. So it's better that you do a mitzvah than if you get someone else to do it. So that's a general principle throughout the whole of Torah. So if you can go and, do a mitzvah, it's better that you should do it rather than get someone else to do it for you.
Not the art of delegation.
No, because if you use your own body to do a mitzvah, so then you've actually accrued a mitzvah to yourself. And not only that, you've brought yourself by, you know, the body impacts the whole being of a person, the whole attitude of a person. So if you yourself got involved in a mitzvah, so then it's quite, it's going to bring you closer to Hashem more than if you just got someone else to do it. So we have this principle throughout the Torah. And the Gemara there actually says, quite amazingly, that so the sages, even though they had what to do with their time, you know, they were the ones that were, they were learning Torah on the highest levels. We can't even understand how great these people were. But they took our time to get ready for Shabbos. One of the things they did, well, there was one, Rav Yosef used to shecht, he was a shoychet, he would go and shecht his own meat for Shabbos. And there was another Rav, I think Rava, would salt the fish. So he would personally get involved. They wouldn't get the maid to do it. They would actually go and do it, right? So we find over there that there's a mitzvah that you should do, should be done by yourself. So now that's not just for the man. That's actually for everybody in the house. You know, so each person, the best thing to do is to dedicate tasks, and each person gets to do a mitzvah. So if you ask me, should the man davka go and buy wine, davka go and buy whiskey? The answer is that the main thing is that there should be, you know, let's say wine or fish or meat inside the house. But it is a greater mitzvah if he goes ahead and does it himself. I'll give you another example. Cleaning the floor for Shabbos and setting the table or making the beds for Shabbos is a big mitzvah.
You're getting into dangerous territory here if you're getting the men to do that kind of chore.
if I remember, the Aruch HaShulchan actually says there that there's a great reward for people that go and almost they sweat when they're running for doing Shabbos chores. You know, there's a certain reward for that. So you see over here that when you get involved in a mitzvah, it's better than if you just get someone else to do it. You know, I live in Israel, we don't have the luxury of maids and this and that, so you end up actually having to do it. But it has an impact on a person. You know, you yourself actually get up and do it. So I can't say to you that for sure it's the man's role to go and buy that, but it is a mitzvah for someone to go to do the mitzvah yourself, to go and buy it yourself more than someone else. You know, so you should actually have a competition in the house who's going to do more mitzvahs, you know. You know, well, I'll get it, then I'll get it, you know.
No, but then, of course, you're leaving the door open for the wife to tell the husband, look, you know, it really will be a mitzvah if you would do X, Y, Z. Maybe that will carry the message. The man won't be so reluctant. I'm not speaking for myself or present company, but just generally.
So that's an important, it's an important thing to know. It's good to do a mitzvah. It's better to do a mitzvah by yourself than to get someone else to do it. And so therefore, if he goes and expends the effort on cleaning and getting ready for Shabbos, then he's actually done that mitzvah. He's got it himself, and it's higher than if someone else did it. Does he have to do it? Not especially him, but as I say, it's very, very good if he does.
Okay, I want to go down another slightly different road, but on the same topic. So, Shabbos and religion, as far as Jews are concerned, is they're inextricably tied together. And here's the thing that I think that a lot of organizations like the Hebrew Order of David are looking for membership and people to get involved in the in the communal side of things and in chesed and raising funds for charity, et cetera, et cetera. It seems to me that the people who are religious in this context and are very involved in the shuls, et cetera, et cetera, seem to be so involved that they don't move away from that to do other stuff. I know they do charity. They probably do give charity. They are involved at a different level, but they're not getting involved, you know, by joining or affiliating themselves to organizations like the Hebrew Order of David or even women, Union of Jewish Women, et cetera, around the world. Is that something which should be done by people, or is the all-consuming Shabbos and religious side of it taking away from the outside world?
Look, whenever there's good to be done, so then one should attach oneself to it. So as long as the organization is doing good, so then it's very chashuv, it's very, very significant to go and join up with some community or an organization that's doing good. We have a klal in the Mishnah in Abbas that says, "Al tafrish min atzibur." Don't separate yourself from the community. And if you look, all the commentators will point out over there that's when people, when that tzibur, when that community, when that organization is doing good, so then one should not separate oneself from that community and that organization. So it's certainly, if the organization is doing good work, then one should certainly get involved. I remember many years ago when I was in South Africa, I was involved with a organization there called Yad Aharon. I mean, I didn't do too much, but I went to go pick up parcels and deliver them.
Very powerful organization today.
And yeah, doing great good in the community. I was blown away, and it gave me a sense of humility to go and pick up parcels and deliver them to people in need. To be a Yid and to be a, is not just to sit and learn. One has to be involved in helping other Yidden. We found that there's three main parts of Torah. There's Torah, there's Avodah, which means, Avodah means, literally means work, but today means Tefillah, means prayer. And then there's Gemilut Chasadim, is Chesed. So we have three pillars on which the whole Torah is based. Torah, and Tefillah, and Gemilut Chasadim. So one has to be you can focus on one, that is true. We found that the others, Avraham Avinu, was focused on chesed. Doesn't mean he didn't pray. We found that he did pray, right? And certainly he knew the Torah, as the Gemara says, and the Pasuk says, that he kept the Torah, right? And Yitzchak Avinu was the man that was focused on tefillah. And Yaakov Avinu was the one that was focused on Torah, right? He was the Yoshev Alim. He was focused. He was sitting in the tent. So a person can have a natural inclination to one of these pillars of Yiddishkeit. Okay, whether it's Torah learning and giving over Torah, or to tefillah, which would be in the shuls and just being very, very focused on prayer. And then the third one would be chesed. And so therefore, one can have a general focus on one of them, because that's just, everybody's got a different, what we call a shoresh ha-neshoma, a root of the neshoma which comes from a different place. But it doesn't mean that's to exclusion completely of any other two pillars. So it is important that people do join organizations that do good. I remember my grandmother, Oliver Shalom, her name was Aggie Brody, and she did amazing chesed for the Jewish Woman's Benevolent. Now, there's another point you should know that actually gets passed down, because when a person sees that his parents are doing chesed and are getting involved in Jewish organization, so then he has an appreciation of what it means to be part of this beautiful thing called the Jewish people. We've got an organization here in Jerusalem where each building has a representative that goes and collects money for poor people every Friday. Tries to collect 10 shekel from each door in the building, and I go with my kids. I'm the representative in my building, and we go and collect 10 shekels try to get 10 shekels from everyone in the building, and eventually that goes to that goes to the poor people of the neighborhood. Now, I go and I actually take my children along with me, because then they actually get to see what it means to be a Jew, that, you know, you can be someone who's learning and someone who's going to shul, but someone that also cares about, you know, other people. And often we get people, you know, knocking on the door, can I have, you know, this or that? And the way that you interact with those people doesn't always matter that how much you give them. But you invite them in with a smile on your face, you give them a cup of water, you know, so then that's already, then your children see, how great it is to be a Jew, because you've got these three pillars. You've got Torah, you've got prayer, and you've got, chesed, kindness.
So the Hebrew Order of David is on a recruitment drive. We're looking to open another lodge in Johannesburg. We've got room for, Jewish men. It doesn't matter how religious or irreligious you are. We'd just like to be affiliated with us and work with us. The new lodge will come into effect hopefully in 2020. And, as I said, Baruch Hashem. And, we're looking for, and so you've heard, and Rabbi, I think you need to come with me on the recruiting drive every time we go talking to people, because, I couldn't have put it more succinctly or more powerfully than what you've told us about doing chesed and about doing good in the community. And the Hebrew Order of David is a vehicle which can actually accommodate all of that, and it will not interfere with your religious activities in any way whatsoever. And of course, throughout the world, we have many Rabbonim who are members of the Hebrew Order of David, and we thank people like the Chabad, organizations like Chabad in America, where we wouldn't be able to operate because they give us facilities and they accommodate us in every way. And in fact, they become members of the Hebrew Order of David International. So that's really what we're about. We've been talking to Rabbi Daniel Brody, who's written a book, and he's writing some others. I'm going to try and help him by collaborating with the limited knowledge that I have. Just joking. He's written a book called Learn Shabbos on 3 minutes a Day. Rabbi, I am learning as I go along, and it's always a pleasure to have you on here, because you put things in a way which people can understand. That's a very important part of really discussing these matters. And it's been fascinating tonight talking about inviting non-religious Jews into religious homes, talking about the male role, you know, as far as Shabbos is concerned. And I must say that last weekend was the Shabbos Project, and I think it was generally well received. I don't think it has quite the sparkle that it had in days gone by, but I think it certainly is bringing to the community something which is inviting non-religious Jews into the occasion. So that's certainly got to stand for something.
Yeah, I mean, as we said, you know, it's an amazing thing to put Shabbos on the map. You know, is an incredible, it's an incredible thing. I mean, the Gemara says if Klal Yisrael, if the Jewish people would keep Shabbos for two Shabboses in a row, so then Mashiach would come. So you see how important Shabbos is.
Anybody that can help
other people get more of an understanding of Shabbos has certainly got a great merit to them, because they're in a sense bringing Mashiach closer. I think it's a great thing. And the question is then just, you know, once you've had the Shabbos Project, so then a person just needs to sit down and think, well, you know, there was something beautiful over here, you know, and now where to from here? You know, if life's a joke, so then he's not going to think anything. But if a person's, you know, serious about life and takes life seriously, so then he has to sit down and consider, well, what is, you know, what is my purpose in this world? And then he can go and discuss with a real passionate, about Torah Rav or Rebbetzin or mentor, someone who absolutely loves Hashem, loves the Torah, and just loves the Jewish people. So he can go and discuss with such a person, how do I take steps forward? Because maybe the Shabbos Project then should actually be an every week story for him. You know, there's so many people that keep Shabbos, and for them it's become normal. And you know, if a person could take those steps, then that would be great. But one has to have that mentor. One has to have that follow up with a passionate about Torah mentor.
I think in the community generally, there's around the world, apathy has crept in. I know that it's probably a harsh thing to say, but I think a lot of people find it much easier to do nothing or go shopping or whatever it is on a Shabbos as opposed to attending shul or being involved in Shabbos in some way or, you know, on a spiritual level. I think they end the week with, you know, they've done their work and now comes the weekend and, you know, let's just chill. And maybe that's a message that needs to somehow find its way through that this, I include myself in some ways, that, this could be much more spiritually, advancing in some way, or advantageous to one's life and one's working life if you could take that time off and be involved. I'm not talking about actually the shul aspect of it, but just generally the notion of Shabbos.
Mm. No, certainly. I mean, if a person could just sit and think about why he was made. You know, Hashem made the most incredible being over here with a brain that's just incredible, a heart that beats all the time. You know, a person's been given the greatest opportunity in the world. You know, the Vilna Gaon says that when a person dies, the hardest point of death is actually as he's being taken to be buried. Why? Because Hashem shows him what he could have achieved. And what he could have achieved is really greatness in the purpose of life. And that's actually why we have a mitzvah to go and walk a person to his spot. Because almost to comfort him, you know. And so therefore one has to, if one takes life seriously and realizes that, well, Hashem must have put me in this world for a reason. And, he's given me the blueprint. He's given me this Torah. So then, you know, let me look into it. You know, the Mishnah in Avos says that it's a funny, way of looking at it, but the Mishnah in Avos says that Hashem is a Bala Bait. He's a boss. He's the owner. And we are Poalim. We are workers. Right? And so therefore, a person needs to see himself as a worker in Hashem's factory. We're really just one big factory. And we're just workers. So some people work in Torah and that's their main focus. And some people work in tefillah and prayer and that's their main focus. Some people work in Jewish organizations and they do chesed and outreach. You know, but a person has to see himself as a worker, because if he doesn't see, then he actually hasn't considered, well, why was I even made? You know, I told my wife this, that I ever thought to write a book, you know, the seven things that they never taught me in school. Because some of the most essential things that that I only learned afterwards only are so important, and that and if I knew them earlier, so then I would have taken more steps earlier. So one just has to realize that life is just one big massive opportunity to use the purpose and to use as an opportunity to serve Hashem and to do more, just to do more, and it goes so quickly. So therefore, a person should just, you know, after a Shabbos project, just like think and sit back and say, well, now what? You know, a Shabbos project can't just be that it's a once a year thing. It doesn't make sense. You know, this great thing for three and whatever, 1,000 years has been going on and on and on. It must be that I'm connected to something. And therefore, a person can go and find a real mentor who's passionate about Torah, absolutely loves Hashem. And then work with such a person, and then they'll see that they're actually fulfilling their purpose in life.
I think it's not only about Shabbos. I think it's about person, about self. Because if you can dedicate yourself to something, I think there's opportunities out there, like joining organizations. It doesn't have to be the Hebrew Order of David. It could be whatever it is. Although we think we're the best opportunity for doing all of this. But in broad terms, I think that we, you know, there is opportunity for people to fulfill themselves a little bit more. And, perhaps that is, something which people should think about going forward. And, you know, maybe that's an opportunity like I did this last Shabbos, spend a few minutes as you advised and just contemplated what it really means. And, I want to thank you for that little bit of advice. We have a few minutes remaining. This is the Hebrew Order of David International. I'm Stan Claff, and we're talking to Rabbi Daniel Brody. He's very involved in Shabbos. He's written as all rabbis should be. He's written a book called Learn Shabbos on 3 Minutes a Day, and he's planning another dozen books, because each time we've discussed, we've come up with a different title and a different topic, and I'm really going to encourage you, Rabbi, to get involved, and I'm going to have you back for more discussions because you're an enlightening and a very admirable type of person to be really helping us and advising on these type of things. And I encourage people to buy your book. You can buy it from the Hebrew Order of David for 365 Rand. And the good news is we'll deliver it to you anywhere in the country in South Africa for free. And I want to thank you again for coming on. I wish everybody a really good Shabbos coming up this weekend. And thank you. And Rabbi, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. And thank you again.
Thanks very much, Stan. And as I said, it's just a real opportunity to express the beauty of being a Yid, to be the beauty of being a Jew, and just to see oneself as being a worker in the factory of Hashem. That's the main thing. And yeah, Imetz Hashem, we'll have more books and more discussions together.
Another word I was looking for a little bit earlier was inspiration. You're inspirational. Thank you.
Baruch Hashem.